Well, at Cisco Live, I was fortunate to sit down with Carlos, a fellow and chief architect with Cisco's customer experience organization. And Carlos has spent nearly 25 years at Cisco, but today he's driving how agentic AI is redefining support, deployment, adoption, and renewals across Cisco's entire product and service landscape. So today, from embedding AI assistance directly into products to eliminating configuration chaos with smarter automation, myself and Carlos will explore how Cisco is balancing trust, governance, and innovation so that AI augments rather than replaces human talent. But how might this workflow-driven AI model change the way you and your team approaches everything from customer support and success in the coming years? Well, for that, you're going to have to join me on the show floor with Carlos now. So thank you for joining me here at Cisco Live. Can you tell everyone listening a little about who you are and what you do?
So thanks a lot for having me, first of all. Appreciate it. So my name is Carlos. I'm a fellow inside Cisco and a chief architect for our customer experience organization. Inside customer experience, we pretty much cover everything that relates with deployment, also the technical support, so the before and during the whole life cycle. But in addition to that, we have the whole customer success team that helps the customers' adoptions, the renewals organization for all the renewals for the whole portfolio of Cisco products and services, plus the engineering that actually builds together with the product management, the solutions that help us to maximize the values that brings for customers as they invest on our technology. I've been at Cisco for almost 25 years, used to have hair when I joined, and that's pretty much how it goes.
You've been incredibly busy as well. I've seen you on stage and seen you whizzing around site here, and so many big announcements. And Cisco is currently reimagining customer experience through agentic AI. So I'm curious, as someone that's been with Cisco for 25 years, how would you describe this shift, and what does it mean for the way that Cisco interacts with its customers?
It's an interesting question. The whole motion of agentic AI first, and then I'll try to get to the second part of your question. So if you think about customer experience, everything in customer experience tends to be a workflow. So you open a support ticket or a ticket request or a TAC case on our scenario. There is always a workflow that the TAC engineer tries to go through in order to minimize the time of the ticket being open or maximize the resolution time in order to get the customer out of the potential outage state and whatever that case might be. If you talk about adoption, the customer bought a potentially solution from Cisco to actually fulfill an intent that he or she had in the first place. But adoption is based on what goods looks like for an adoption journey and where you are on that, what's the drift from the initial plan. So there is a workflow that goes there. Well, deployment professional services is based on a scope of work. That alone is a workflow that has timelines associated with that. So renews is also, you have a time that was the event renew. So everything inside customer experience for us is a workflow. So if you look around Gen AI, when Gen AI starts, Gen AI is pretty much language driven. That's why LLMs. And LLMs has a lot to do with language, as the name says, which intrinsically means more interface with the end user, more business to consumer. While for us, the majority of our interactions are business to business, if you think about this, amongst teams, amongst tools, and then solves for particular outcomes like solve a support ticket or actually drive adoption, increase the propensity of a renewal so the customer is happy. How is the sentiment associated with that? So when you look at LLMs, it's more about how we interact on a chat interface these days. It's getting to reasoning and it's getting much better, but it's not workflow driven yet. But agentic actually solved that problem because you can decompose this in multiple areas of an agentic being specific on particular tasks, and then has the workflows mapped as an agentic workflow. So that is why we have been using AI on Cisco CX for many, many years. So for instance, on our support organization, we have used machine learning models that helps to what's the next best action, for instance. And we have on the Renews organization predictive machine learning models that do propensity and risk analysis for Renews. When we put LLMs on top of this, it becomes more interfacing for making natural language kind of easier for the customers and our own teams to consume. But agentic becomes the breakthrough where they say, okay, now I can deal with the workflows and integrate all of them. So we were early on that, and that's where we got the partnerships with this. How is that changing how we interface to the customers, to your second part of your question? So it allows us to do, I'll give you an example. So in our support organization, which is you have an issue, you open a ticket if you want. So we have launched almost 2 years by now, almost that, 1.5 years, I would say. We have a Cisco support assistant. What is that? It's basically all the intellectual capital that we have for almost 40 years of Cisco here, plus the machine learning model that defines what the workflows for a resolution, what's the next best action, all of that. So we put a natural language interface on top of this to make this conversational. Well, guess what happens? If you open a ticket and you go in a support assistant, it's another modality. You can open a call, talk with a person, chat. You have now an AI assistant there. Great. So we look at this and said, what if we could have that AI assistant now embedded into the product AI assistant itself? So we went to our security business that has already done AI assistant for security, have all the security models that we are talking about. And that is a very interesting situation that we figure out. If you go to a product, let's take security as an example, and you open an AI assistant, you have a Gen AI interface, and you start to ask questions. But the model for that particular portal is trained on the knowledge of the product. You don't train a model on the product, on the bugs. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a bug in the first place, right? So, but on the tag, you have historical defects, how it interacts with other products. So what you did way before MCP was a thing, for instance, we actually make the bidirectional integration where you carry context between the product and the AI assistant for support. So now the SecOps on this example, on the security example that I gave, that lady or gentleman could have with a single interface interact with the AI assistant. He or she doesn't know if he's talking with the AI assistant on the product or the AI assistant on support because the context is carried. So this has helped for the SecOps people on our customers to have a much simpler experience. Because let's be honest, what's the likelihood that you ask the same question to two different AI agents and you have different answers? It's very, very high. So when you bring this together, we remove that potential friction and swivel chair. It's been shipping since October last year in production for all the security products at Cisco. But it also has a very interesting indirect effect. When you start to look at this as an example on how it changed, we said, okay, we're going to have a lot more cases using that modality, right? As it turns out, we actually have a much higher deflection rate on that modality than anywhere else. It means that the customers have solved the problems proactive and don't need to open a case. So there are interactions. We can track the interactions, but they end up resolved before people need to open a ticket. So it's an interesting kind of lens on how the interface with the customers. It's just one example to try to answer your question.
And I'd love to mention a stat from a recent Cisco report that suggested that 68% of customer support interactions will be handled by agentic AI by 2028, which isn't that far away. So what's driving that level of adoption and what does it signal for enterprise IT teams, do you think?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. That I believe that stat, it came from our agentic report that we put out there based on a survey of 8,000 plus people and IT directs and executives on the customers and enterprise across the globe. So I gave you this example of integrating an AI assistant on the product. That's one example. Another one that might be interesting that you think about it. Today, we have an average of 15 million interactions a year that goes for the multiple modalities. A call, clarifications, chats, go to the assistant embedded in the browser that is into the documentation of our products, all the way to the AI assistant itself and the modality embedded on the products. Out of those, we have an average of 1.6 million cases a year. That 60% is touched by AI and automation is pretty much that this, out of this bulk of potential tickets, we have the severity 3 and severity 4. Severity 1 is like catastrophic outage, something that is really bad. Severity 3 and severity 4 are low priorities. What I mean by that, there is a considerable amount of cases that we get open that is basically documentation. I can't find that information. Here's my scenario, how to go there. So it's basically knowledge-based driven kind of insights that the customer needs to solve a particular doubt, something that is not going as he or she expected. So those we are offloading to the AI through automation to be able to automate the process to stack rank them and then get AI to solve them based on the knowledge base that exists. It has two effects for us. One is it gives the time to resolution for those almost immediately. Second, it frees up our engineers to actually help on the priority ones and twos, which are the ones that tend to be higher severity with high impact for the customer. So we see that the AI and automation on this particular example focuses on the low severity has actually helped us to increase the amount of high severity cases that are closed in less than 24 hours. So you see the compounding effect. So it has, and we can do this through agentic on a sense that I have agents that deals with severity 2, severity 4. We have an agent that helps with the handoffs for the high ones. So here's what I mean by that. If you get automated an AI to help close the ones that are quick, the high severity ones, the complicated ones, which you call the complex case, they may stay longer. So, and when they stay longer, they may cross boundaries of time zones. So the worst thing that can happen is like you open a case 8 a.m. in the morning in the U.S., and then you want an update 8 p.m., and then you get on a call and the engineer is now in Europe or in Asia or something like that. And that particular engineer asks, hey, can you tell me what just happened? And that frustration level goes to the roof. So we now have an agent that does seamless handoff, AI-driven, and summarization to the engineer for everything. So you don't need to do that. Same thing, we grab context for the customer. We get this, so I don't need to ask you, can you ship your configuration again? Can you do it? So those are very small tactical things that make a huge difference for optimization, and the number shows.
So for business leaders that are listening, maybe they rely on more traditional automation, maybe sat on the fence around agentic AI. Can you just explain how it goes beyond that with agentic AI and the kind of new capabilities that it unlocks? Because you always get some enterprises that sit back and think, how's this going to play out? It's not going anywhere, is it? The adoption is increasing rapidly.
Yeah. I believe there is multiple components for that. And one when you talk about agentic AI for us, I want to be clear for the audience of your podcast. We are not talking about agentic equals to autonomous. That means everything is going to be an AI. There's always a human in the loop and a human on the loop. It depends on how you're considering that. The reason I'm saying this is because when you bring some of these automations that are augmented by AI, especially on multiple agents that are connected through context-driven based on a workflow, that's business-driven workflow, what we are talking about is augmentations. I'm not talking about replacement. I'll give you an example. To your initial question, why sometimes the adoption is not as high? There is a human nature of fear change. Like, hey, this is different. I don't want to touch that. So that applies to every business, personal, it's just the natural or the human being. There's another aspect that we'd observe, which is trust. So people say, hey, I don't trust this. Why should I use that? Without even trying. So I'll give you an example that work with the customers that we interact with, which is we work with the customer, help the customer to build all the infrastructure, all the setup for an AI agentic solution that would help them. It was a media company. So friends and peers of yours. So it's a media guy and the media company rather. And it was an AI agent system that was helped with the editorials. So guess what happens? They got built all the system. They got to the historical analysis and all the papers and write the articles and human in the loop, right? So you put that, 3 weeks later, nobody, absolutely zero adoption. No, zero, none. So like, we're like, what the heck just happened? And then we talk with the customers. The customer, and then they say, well, guess what? The people don't trust it. The writer is no better. So I say, okay, fair enough. So what we did, together with the leadership, we create a blind test. So we actually get some articles being written by the AI agent, some writers being written by regular journalists, and then you poke them there and ask the people to choose the one they like better without knowing where it was coming from. Yeah, 3 weeks later, again, 76% of the whole editorial team have picked the AI one. and then they're like, oops. So it got to a point that now we have 100% adoption because they understand like, hey, this can help me, but I can calibrate and use this to my own style and stuff like that. So that is an example. The third aspect that I want to highlight for the audience of your podcast, in addition to the the human nature that I mentioned before, to fear the unknown and the trust, there is another aspect that we're observing that relates to automation, which is people are waiting for the perfect solution, right? And automation is not something new. We've been doing this for decades, literally. And if I look out there, using network automation as an example, you were on the keynote. We just announced that services as code extended across a whole portfolio. It's using automation. It's based on the GitOps concept. It's using the abstraction for automation like Terraforms and Ansible that exists on the products out there. Put on a pipeline. The only difference is that now we have the schema for the whole product and you validate the test and you even Gen AI to generate multiple scenarios on what could go wrong and test against them on a virtual environment before it hit production. So we are maximizing as much as we can to the notion of the perfection to minimize the risk. But I believe people don't have a not click it yet. It's the fact that on any AI application that people are building these days or putting together, that is more business driven. I'm not talking about the ChatGPT like that you ask a question, you're given an answer. I'm saying as you build your business application of any sort and you inject AI on it, like this editorial that I just mentioned, the notion that you put something like LLM on the application, it makes your application non-deterministic, just by concept. So now the notion that, and I mentioned this on one of my sessions this week, I told the people like, hey, if you choose your programming language and write the Hello World program, classic, right? You're going to have 100 times back Hello World. On an AI, not necessarily. They may come back and have a nice day kind of thing. So it's not 100% predictable. It's not deterministic, I would say. With that said, the mindset needs to shift. I want to get perfection. If you want to get the value of AI on Gen AI, you need to acknowledge the fact that you're part of the process to make it better. There is a data-driven feedback loop. With agentic AI, we make it better because the agents can be specific on a smaller set of domain things, so we reduce the uncertainty on deterministic. Because if you know the workflows, which is in our case, we know for support on that, so those are predictable. Those are deterministic, so we can have a better result. As I was mentioning to you before, I was presenting on the LangChain event on agentic AI on our own CX use case. And I mentioned that on our Renews assistant, which has Renews agents, adoption agents, sentiment analysis agent, all of that, we hit 95% accuracy. And people are like, whoa, that's amazing. How you did that? Well, guess what? We use a predictive machine learning model that we train with the signals that we know. We have well-defined workflows, and I use LLM just for the interface for the customer, so it makes natural language process. So the scope of uncertainty is really, really small, while you can control what the reasoning comes from a specific use case. And that's where I believe as we put more services code from Cisco for automation network, we can reduce that scope, increase the validation of the tests that comes with that, and then minimize the uncertainty and hit the point two and point three. Obviously, there is always fear for human change that is going to be there, but that's how we show improved points, and other customers have done the same, and then show the benefits for an efficiency and simplicity. People ends up evolving towards that. That's how we're aiming for.
And listening to conversations on the show floor here, the concept of config confidence is gaining traction. I'm hearing that a lot. Can you just explain exactly what that means in practice and how it is actually reducing errors and downtime? Because it feels, I'm hearing a lot of people talking about it here.
Yeah, this config confidence, I believe, is the antagonic concept of config chaos, right? And it builds up. Interesting that you asked that question, because it leverages what I just mentioned before on one of the functionalities of services code, but it goes beyond that. So just to give a notion, remember that I mentioned on the previous answer that we have 1.6-ish million cases in a year? On any given time, the amount of cases that we have open for support, around 25% of them is related to configuration errors. That is a lot. It is a lot. And configuration errors can be just the classical fat finger. someone did that. It could be automated by a tool, but there are configuration errors. We are on a mission, I would say, to actually get out of this chaos, because some of those can generate nasty outages or behaviors that we don't want to be in production. And usually they're human errors. A lot of times, the vast majority of the times. So how we can put automation, as I mentioned before, by mapping what is the whole data model that actually makes the network work, how it's supposed to be, and then go to our configurations upfront and test them on the scenarios that you need to deploy and any variation for that, and only allow the configuration change to happen on an automated fashion after it got validated and guarantee before. So that's our approach. And by doing so, we are getting out of the configuration chaos, which is, as I mentioned, 1/4 of everywhere in the world is configuration errors, which is not a new thing. It's been there forever. So we've been trying to address this. Like you say, okay, if we get now on a point that we can have a tool set and actually generate all the scenarios, and that's where AI helps a lot, because it makes more conversational, it makes all the hypotheses possible, and you test all of that and validate. So increase the confidence, and you can automate those after only the test has been actually done. And that is why you're going for the configuration confidence, to say, hey, you do not make that change. Because there are situations, I'll tell you, let's say you're running happy, and then obviously that Friday night when you have agreed to go on a dinner with your wife that you are delaying for months, there is that vulnerability that hits the industry. And then you get this beautiful Cisco report that says, hey, your environment X percentage is exposed. The before is like, it's exposed. What do you want me to do? We are going beyond that, like, hey, out of this environment that you have, like your state, X amount is now vulnerable. Here's the potential scenarios that we test to validate. Here's the level of exposure that you do. You already run the automated test. Do you want me to remediate or not? And that something then, depending on the level of automation, the process that you have in the company, you can say, I wait until Saturday morning, or you can, I would approve to another person, or you can go there because you can have this automation in your fingertips. That is the level of how you bring in this together. There is something that we didn't mention today on the keynote and on the sessions, not on the keynote, but on the sessions, I mentioned this briefly. We are even thinking about how does that means as it compares with your peers. So you can benchmark like, hey, you are, let's say, financial services or healthcare or whatever. Guess what? Everybody on your industry has a configuration already on that state, and you're not. That is where we make it different. Instead of the vulnerability hitting you and you need to react, we actually change it to a model to be proactive. So go to, hey, Neil, you have this stuff there for a month. It's coming for you. Can you do something? Let's do something. So we actually make this remediate before it hits. And that's where we mentioned on the keynote the proactive, predictive, and hyper-personalized, because I can say, hey, Neil, your scenario is unique, but actually, guess what? There are other customers that are similar, and it happened to them. You don't want this to happen to you, kind of thing.
And of course, AI efficiency is going to continue to grow. It's inevitable, and human relationships are still valued by customers. So I'm curious, how are you at Cisco balancing those two forces to create that more trusted and adaptive customer experience? I mean, you mentioned human in the loop, but it is just that, isn't it?
It is, as I mentioned before, we are looking at AI for the lens of CX for augmentation and assistant, not for replacement. So, for instance, our own internal teams, we are not giving more headcount for the teams, but you're not removing headcounts away. So you're removing the boring tasks and automate them away so the people can do more value-added kind of work. So I'll give an example. Some of the people have spent like 30% of their time, 40% of your time doing admin task goings across tools. It's part of the job, but it's a mechanical thing that if you can automate away, you're the same people, we can hit more opportunities, we can talk with more customers, we can maximize the value, we can drive more adoption. So we are looking at AI with the human in the loop from three angles. One is how we can have AI to optimize the efficiency on that person. And I'm not talking about a chatbot. I'm talking about the ability to go through the workflow that they go on the day. And they, if you can optimize here, that, and the other, how it makes it better for them work, removing the friction. That's one angle. The other angle on the human in the loop is as we develop all of these tools and systems, we have the subject matter experts with us as part of the advisory, data-driven, and vetting thing. So I'm not an expert on how is the process of a renews because I'm not a financial person, or I'm not an expert how this, that, and the other might work. There are people that are specialized on that. So what we do, we bring them in to help plan and design in the beginning. Even though they don't know how to spell agentic, that's okay. You are an expert on the outcome that this system is supposed to provide. So you're going to be part of the design upfront. That is not how typically it worked in the past, right? But now, because of what I mentioned before, the undeterministic nature of the beast, we need this upfront because we make sure that it actually is trained and fine-tuned and qualified to what you want to do. So, and as we ship it, they are also part of the feedback loop, like, hey, that answer is great, but it would be even greater if that, if I said, okay, so what else do you need to put on this? What kind of a training did? That's the second aspect of the human in the loop. And the third one is what I mentioned to you, is like how we build trust for the adoption of that. Remember that blind test that I mentioned to you? So we look at the human in the loop from those three aspects: how we augment on the work of people, how we make them part of the process from our internal teams on end users, same. And the last but not least, how we have them as part of the using or the usage or consumption of that, be interacted in such a way that, hey, they can calibrate for this. That's how you're thinking about. It's not about replacing. Even though in the beginning, a lot was about reducing costs, these people is going to replace jobs. I believe ChatGPT came out in November 2022, if I'm not mistaken. So we are mid-2025, so 2 years and a half, right? So I believe the maturity curve of perceptions of the corporations to say, hey, that can bring some efficiency, that we make some adjustments. But the type of work that humans will do will be required, and actually to make AI to work better. We are very clear on this inside Cisco, internally in our customers. But beyond that, as you look forward, these humans are not going anywhere, especially when you're trying to make agentic to become less of only B2C and more B2B, and agents across corporations how we carry context and stuff like that. So I hope it answered your question.
Yeah. And finally, if we look at the broader tech landscape, what do you think will separate the vendors who thrive in this agentic AI future from those that are falling behind? Anything that you see here?
I would get two aspects on that one. It's a very interesting question. Thank you for that. As I'm talking with multiple customers, and I present this at least twice on the sessions this week on the show, if you look at any of the solutions that are built from an IT or a CISO department, they're anchored on the traditional tripod of people, process, and technology, right? With AI, especially since Gen AI, everybody rushed to the technology, and there was a hype. The amount of pseudo specialists overnight become amazing, and the point is, it's getting almost to an addiction, because AI is moving so fast. Every now and then, every week, pretty much, there is a new tool. And that new tool open up a new category is cooler than the previous one. And like, oh my God, when is that end? And you keep turning that. And the fact that a lot of people has focused on the technology and surf on the hype, they tend to forget the people and the process. To answer your question, I believe the companies that will succeed, and I'll put Cisco customer experience on that lens. And the reason I mentioned that is because when it blows up in the hype in 2022, the first thing myself, listen, Tony and the team here, we look like, no, let's define the use case first. What actually brings actually business impact that has a ROI, and when it optimizes and changes our process, because on the case of customer experience, as I mentioned before, everything is a workflow. Which ones we can prioritize to make it better, to make it more efficient, but also to make it proactive and make it predictive, because the customers actually will demand this for them. But one anchor is on the teams and on the talent. So we start to see, okay, this is moving at unprecedented speed, right? And we still have stuff that runs in production. So we need a separate experimentation team that has the permission and the charter to go and try stuff out based on the use case. Yeah, they tried, the first interaction was not good, the model changed, guess what? Well, you need to start it again. And it go, but they're moving on a speed that the regular people could not, right? And that is part of we're seeing. There is another aspect, which is a joke that I'll go on your podcast attendee, which is the evaluations team. So I typically say that you don't make the dog in charge of the sausage. That's not going to go well, right? So the evaluation team are the ones that holds the data sets, are the ones that are in charge to define what level of accuracy I need to go there for a particular app, and did I hit that? And if I did not hit that, you're not going to go out. So it changes the model how it was done before, because you have before dev, QA, and prod. It's still somehow along this, but you need to have an evaluation team because you have the undeterministic aspect on some of those applications, and you need to put security associated with that. And security is not only the traditional infrastructure security and application security. Now you have safety associated with the hallucinations and impersonations and prompt injections and a lot of things that goes with that, which Cisco has a lot of solutions you saw on the show for this. But beyond this, there is also that team is the guardians of the golden data set. So what is the actually pure data set that is not being used, so I can contrast what good looks like. And the experimentation team becomes sort of a runway. So you're building the next and the next and the next, while the production team is going to go on the pace that needs to be done for the adoption of the customer that you have, whatever business area you're in. And last but not least, to wrap on your question, make the people part of the solution, not part of the problem. What I mean by that is AI is coming with extremely speed, as I mentioned, and is very powerful. So it can be threatening and frightening for some or for most, depending on the business you're in. So if you go and just jump on the technology and try to adopt, the team is going to fall behind. So make them part of the journey. At Cisco, on our customer experience, we actually increase the curriculum and make the curriculum of AI to raise the bar of everybody. Not everybody's going to develop a new application in AI. Not everybody's going to write code. Not everybody's going to have access to the GPUs. That's fine. But everybody's going to have the minimal knowledge to feel that they are relevant on that new agentic approach that we're taking CX, because they understand. So, and they by understanding, they, oh, I see how you're doing that to actually make my job better or reduce the friction on my job. And then even the amount of ideas that we get from use case for our internal teams increase in quantity and more than anything in quality. So it increases the motivation. So I believe the companies that would succeed is the ones that go now. Don't wait to be perfect, because it's not going to be perfect because of the difference in the speed. And the ones that consider people and process, not only the hype, and bring the teams along. So they will be more prepared to identify the opportunities ahead.
Yeah, 100% with you. I always say version one is always better than version none. So I will add a link to the report that we referenced today, and also a link to your LinkedIn so people can find you nice and easy if they want to continue this conversation. But I appreciate how busy you are. You are back to back today. So thank you for stopping by.
You're welcome. Anytime. Thank you for having me again. And God bless all of us here, man.
I think my guest today made it clear that true transformation happens when AI is deployed with people and process in mind, not just shiny new technology. And by tackling repetitive tasks, preserving context, and freeing experts to solve bigger challenges, I think Cisco's approach shows how agentic AI can raise efficiency without losing trust. Trust that is required to keep customer relationships strong. And the journey from configuration to chaos to configuration confidence, I think, proves that automation works best when humans guide it and shape its purpose. And companies ready to blend practical governance with open collaboration, these are the ones that will thrive as AI continues to mature and into an everyday partner for workflows and decision making. But which part of any of the strategies we discussed today could possibly help your organization build trust, scale support, and most importantly, keep human expertise front and center, especially as AI becomes part of every interaction? Lots to think about there. Please email me, techblogwriter@outlook.com, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, just at Neil C. Hughes. So let me know your thoughts. I'll be back again very soon with another guest. But thank you for joining me and following the coverage at Cisco Live. But that's it for today.